Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
It's in the past, it's in the past. Then we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts, we play the Tottenham way.
And still Ricky Villa! What a fantastic run! He scored!
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know.
Well, hello again, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of The Tottenham Way. I'm Marcus Buckland, reflecting on last night's Europa League draw with Roma. Terrific game, disappointing result, of course. And we have Fulham coming to North London on Sunday. So a lot to reflect upon, a lot to look forward to. Tom Barkley from The Sun is here. You were at the game last night, Tom. I had a number of friends and family there as well. They said the atmosphere was great. And the game was great, even if the end result wasn't quite what we wanted. Did you enjoy your experience?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I generally do when it comes to Tottenham, just as a neutral, the games are always pretty entertaining. And this one was right up there, to be honest. Just loads of chances, goals disallowed, crossbar hit many times by both teams, but particularly Spurs. A last-minute goal, which made for a pretty swift rewrite. You know, obviously Ranieri being back was quite an interesting topic from a national newspaper's point of view. But I suppose from Spurs' perspective, it just a sucker punch right at the end that kind of means all of the entertainment doesn't count for much. But I do think it was probably a fair result in the end. Roma had actually, for a team that have been in disarray for most of this season and onto their third manager, I thought had quite a lot of threat going forward and had some good players and probably created enough chances that they probably deserve something from the game. But it also felt like a bit of an opportunity missed from Spurs' perspective.
Yeah, it's interesting. Actually, I've read a number of reports and spoken to lots of different people, and it's one of those games where you get different answers depending on who you speak to. I was working, but I saw most of the game, and my impression was, yeah, a draw was probably a fair result. Then I read one report in particular, which said Spurs bossed most of it, had lots of chances. Again, that was true to a degree. So I guess you have different opinions depending on your mindset. I know this is about Spurs and not about Roma or Claudio Ranieri, but you had a good piece in the paper regarding the maverick Italian who's 73 now. Is he as mad as a March hare? Have you got to know him a bit over the past couple of days?
No, to be honest, I haven't been at his press conference. I wasn't at his press conference the other day, and I was in the mix zone speaking to Dejan Kulusevski last night. But I believe his press conference that he did ahead of the game was all in Italian. I do actually speak a bit of Italian, but not probably to his level. But I mean, Ranieri was someone that I covered quite a lot of Fulham during his very brief tenure there. Obviously, we know everything about Leicester and Chelsea, but in the build-up to this game, I'd forgotten, first of all, that he actually managed Watford for even less time than he did at Fulham. But Fulham was a disaster, I can tell you that. It really, whatever he tried, didn't work. I mean, maybe it was a bit of a sinking ship at the time, but it really didn't work at the time. And I feel like in England, his whole sort of credibility and the way we regard him has kind of been dampened because of those experiences. But having spoken to people in Italy about how he's regarded over there, they just completely dismiss that. I mean, it's just one of or two of many jobs he's had throughout his career, and they focus on the success stories, of which there are actually quite a lot in Italy, whether it be, you know, taking teams, you know, close to winning title like he did with Roma, or saving teams from relegation. And I have to say, I was impressed. Like I say, given the problems that they faced this season, with what they end up producing, it did feel like a team that Roma were trying to sort of quickly learn his methods. But they caused Spurs problems. And I know Spurs probably give up too many chances at times for some people's liking. And against a team like Roma with a player like Dybala, who I was quite surprised to get taken off at half-time for tactical reasons, because it felt like he was bossing it at times in the first half. you don't need to give them too much encouragement for them to punish you. And there were a few moments where, not for very, very narrow offside, where they could have been punished even more than they were, Spurs. But then again, they missed a lot of chances as well. So I sort of see what you're saying about some people thinking Spurs did boss it. I suppose my perspective is Tottenham are a very good team, and they at home, they should be expecting to dominate possession, create a lot of chances. It was the fact that Roma had as many chances as they did, and good ones, that makes me feel like a draw was probably fair.
Yeah, well, it looks as though Ranieri certainly got a response straight away out of his Roma players. I suspect that if we played them a couple of weeks earlier, we'd have won that match. But, you know, looking at the overall situation, played 4-1-2, drawn 1, lost 1, just outside the top 8. And relatively, I don't want to be the kiss of death, but relatively straightforward fixtures to come, although Rangers are playing really well in Europe at the moment. It looks, Tom, as though Spurs are well poised to qualify from the top 8. Would you agree with that?
Well, yes, but you know, now they've dropped out of the top 8 to start off with, down to 9th, I think. So it comes back to what I was saying about an opportunity missed. It really felt like a win here would have put them into a great position for that automatic qualification, which Ange has made no bones about how much he wants it. I mean, to avoid having to play extra games in February, and you know, his squad is pretty stretched as it is with the fixture list. Not that he's complaining, because last season he was complaining about the lack of games, not due to not being in Europe, but there's no getting away from it. They could do without having two extra fixtures in February. And I think Galatasaray was a bit of a free hit. I think even at full strength, the way the Galatasaray seemed to be playing, or they did that night with Osman up front, there was no guarantee, and under that hostile atmosphere, that the Spurs would get a victory there anyway. So that was definitely the toughest fixture in this group. But it's the fact that, you know, 12 points would have really set them up. Elfsborg to come, we know by now not to think of any game with Tottenham and count your chickens over it, because it very quickly comes back to bite you. But you would think at home to Elfsborg, they'd have a very good chance of winning that game. So I don't know, a bit of work to do still to go. And when you consider where they were at, you know, 90 minutes last night, that is a frustration.
Yeah. Yes. The Elfsborg game is match day 8 of 8. That's on the 30th of January. And before then, a trip to Hoffenheim, who, again, Spurs will start that one as favourites. And what is an increasingly tricky looking fixture against Rangers, whose European form does not reflect their struggles domestically. And that is the next match on the 12th of December. All eyes were, of course, on Fraser Forster last night. He pulled off one fantastic save. Overall, how do you feel he acquitted himself?
I thought he did well, actually. I did think let's start with the positives, because I do think in this distribution, the sort of worries that we have over him did flare up a few times. So it wasn't a completely perfect performance. But one thing we know of Fraser Forster, at his peak, definitely, he's been an excellent shot stopper. And I think he proved that again, that he's still got that in his locker last night, despite, you know, he's going to turn 37 in March. I know goalkeepers don't go on for longer, but he's a player who had only played 4 games in 17 months before then. And first of all, the first half, there was a moment where there was a clever little pass round the back of Spurs, and suddenly Dybala was in, albeit on the sort of right-hand side of the box. And Forster was alive to the danger, came out and blocked it well with his, you know, quite considerable, massive body. Did well in that particular moment. And then the key moments came in right towards the end of the game. And I remember when I was doing my match report, which, remember, I have to reflect, kind of, it's not just Spurs related like this podcast. It's kind of whatever is the most interesting from a national point of view. And I was kind of thinking of some sort of Ranieri related intro, because it's his return to England. And then Forster makes two great saves right towards the end of the game. First of all, after a pretty dreadful back header from Porro, which put him right in danger, and he denied, I think it was Dovbik, the Ukrainian, who had a couple of goals was offside for a couple of chances that led to the goals being ruled out earlier in that half. And then the next one was the real, you know, top, showing what Forster's really capable of, when he denied Mancini like about a minute later. And that's when I thought, right, quick rewrite. It's all about Fraser Forster, because that was the topic going into, from a Spurs point of view, into the game anyway. And he's suddenly done something, and it was quite key. And it's almost like he's passed his first test of this almost like trial period of whether Spurs do need to go and get a new goalkeeper with Vicario out, or whether they can, whether he's good enough to manage this situation. Then obviously Mats Hummels goes and scores and changes the whole dynamic anyway. But you know, but from that point of view, I thought he was very good. Had a good night. There were still times though, one shaky pass out, which in the second half, and it was in isolation. So you know, there are going to be moments, but it just sort of where one, I think it was the second half, the ball comes back to him, and it was just a poor sort of poorly executed pass that I don't think it went out of play, but it suddenly put one of his right back, I think Porro, into a bit of difficulty. And Ange just talked ahead of the game quite interestingly about what he wants from his goalkeepers. And he was asked about Joe Hart, who's in his comments about how Postecoglou opened up his mind towards being a goalkeeper. And he said, look, you know, there's a lot being made about me wanting to play out from the back. And yes, I do, but I'm not suddenly looking for these kind of Edison-esque long balls. If anything, I'm looking for short, sort of consistent passes from my goalkeepers that are pretty low risk and actually harder to, easier to execute than those sort of Edison-esque sort of, you know, diags that Steven Gerrard used to do. So those are the kind of passes that goalkeepers generally are very used to doing, and if anything are one of the most consistent players, you know, in the team at pulling off. So the way he explained it to our man Dan Kilpatrick, who asked the question about it, it was actually quite, you know, sort of really saw where he was coming from, and you started to believe that, you know, Forster should fit right into that really. But having seen the evidence, yeah, I still have doubts over how effective he's going to be on that front. But then it comes back to how much will that really matter? I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I think the most important thing is that everybody gets behind him. Of course, it's a huge blow to lose Vicario, particularly on the back of such a fantastic win at Manchester City. But I've read a few things and it's just been unkind to Forster. Give him a chance. But I know you've been listening and talking to Ange today, and he's been looking ahead to the January transfer window. Do you think that Spurs were guilty of overlooking the cover they had in the goalkeeping department? And irrespective of how well or not Forster plays between now and January the 1st, do you think it's a given that they will sign another goalkeeper?
In January?
Yeah.
Do I think it's a given? I don't think it's a given that is they're going to sign a keeper in January. I think they're sort of seeing how this goes, first of all, with Forster. And if he does well enough, because remember, you know, we've got what, a month ago full of loads of games before we even get to put opportunity to buy someone. Yes, they could bring in a free transfer now, but he's already ruled that out. I literally asked them in the pre-match press conference, and he said, no, that's not going to happen. So if you're talking about bringing someone in, it's not, you know, it's a month to go, and none of us really quite know how the extent of this broken ankle with Vicario. Like, obviously he managed to play on, so it's not, can't be the worst thing in the world. He did say it'll be months, but that could mean February. And by then, if he's suddenly looking like he's not far away, then you're basically having to get through January, which, yes, does have a lot of games, but doesn't necessarily mean you have to definitely bring in someone. You might be able to, particularly if Forster's playing well, you might not necessarily have to make the move. But on the other flip side of that, it's Spurs were looking next summer to look to maybe bring in another goalkeeper, because Forster's will be 37 by then. He'll be out of contract. I think Alfie Whiteman's out of contract by then as well. So it was a natural position to be looked at anyway then. Now, I believe that may well have been accelerated to January. That doesn't necessarily mean it's definitely going to happen, but because of what's happened to Vicario, even though Ange has publicly said it doesn't make any difference, I wouldn't be surprised to see them make a signing there in January as a result, because they were already thinking about doing it. And if the right opportunity comes up, why wouldn't you do it then, if given the situation with Vicario? Was your first question, have they sort of made a mistake basically not looking at it before? Well, that was Dan's argument, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Tom, I was going to say, Dan, to be fair, has constantly made reference to the concern. And again, I want to get behind Fraser Forster. Lionel Messi, of all people, said a few years back after a Celtic-Barcelona Champions League game that he saw the greatest ever goalkeeping performance. Oh, 12 years. Yeah, okay. 12 years ago. He still produced it.
It did.
12 years ago. But it's always struck a chord with me as well that this was an accident waiting to happen?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, but, you know, I thought he played quite well last night. So let's see where we go from him. I mean, to be fair to Ange, as he pointed out, when the whole Jed Spence not being in the squad and the people should have left Forster out instead. I mean, this has actually looked to have been the right call, whether he would have wanted it this way or not, because...
You can't leave out your... I'm sorry, I'm not going to give him credit for that. You've got to have your number two keeper in the squad.
Well, you say that, but I think a lot of fans were saying leave Forster out because they couldn't have left Austin or Whiteman out because of the whole homegrown rule. That's why they're in there in the first place.
So yeah, but Tom, sorry to keep butting in.
Yep, go on.
Sorry to keep butting in, but if and I haven't seen those two in action, but if either of them had a future at the club, they would have done something by now. They've been hanging around for years and have barely strung a performance together between them at any notable level.
Yeah, I'm with you. And that's where he's clearly at as well, because otherwise he would have done something differently. But I'm just saying, when Jed Spence was left out of the Europa League squad, a lot of fans were saying, why didn't he leave Forster out and keep Spence in? You've obviously argued exactly why, and it's kind of proved to be the case. Now Vicario is injured, he had to pick him. So I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I guess what we'll see over the next, from here until January, over how much of an issue Forster not being up as good as Vicario, particularly with his feet, will come to pass. And then it will, then Dan will look, if that does become an Achilles heel for Spurs over this next 10 games or whatever it is in that period, then he will look like a pretty savvy operator, won't he? But I thought personally in the summer, a left back was more of a position that I would have wanted first. But yes, goalkeeper is a position that they maybe could have strengthened. But it was a weird one, wasn't it? Because they've obviously left themselves short with homegrown players. They decide to sell Oliver Skipp. And I don't think anyone is crying about Oliver, as much as people liked Oliver Skipp, about him not being at the club anymore. And I think they got good money for him. So I think most people in the position of the club would have probably done the same thing. But it did leave them kind of short when it came to this side of the situation, particularly in Europe. So therefore, they had to have these two goalkeepers who, in your mind and probably a lot of fans' minds, probably don't have, based on the evidence we've seen, much of a future at the club. So suddenly you have five goalkeepers on the book if you bring another one in as well. I'd see it both ways, I suppose. What do you think? Do you think they made a mistake by not bringing another goalkeeper in the summer?
As I said, I thought it was a bit of an accident waiting to happen. But I again reiterate the fact that I don't want to dismiss Fraser Forster. Yeah, I want to give him a chance, but I do wonder if Pat Jennings could sort of come back in and do a job for us as well, because he still looks super fit. Just in terms of Ange in general, because he was looking ahead to the Fulham game as well as possible signings in January, I got the impression from one or two of the clips I saw today that he was in a pretty good mood. He's having to answer the same old questions time after time. Keep saying, mate, you know, surely you'd rather we were entertaining than totally reliable. Was it business as usual? And do you sense he's still got a little bit of a pep in his step, despite the injury to Vicario?
Yeah, it was definitely business as usual when it comes to a pre-match press conference. He's always, I mean, I'm trying to remember the last time he was in a grouchy mood ahead of a game. To be honest, I wasn't in the presser. Like I say, I was down speaking to Kulusevski and Radu Dragozin, actually, for a piece for Sunday last night. But from the guys who were there, they did say he was in pretty jovial mood. He has been quite a lot recently, actually, compared to, you know, stark contrast to quite a few press conferences last season post-match, you know, ones that stick out, you know, like the whole Man City, you know, game where he talks about fragile foundations. He was almost visibly shaking after that game with frustration and anger. I haven't seen too much of that this season. But I think, you know, when it comes to the questions about entertainment versus and pragmatism and all that kind of stuff, when Moose from TalkSport asked the question about that, he knew it was coming. He kind of rolled his eyes to a certain extent, or at least, you know, his body language sort of suggested that was how he felt about it. And I think he's just sort of been there before and he's just heard it all before. But that doesn't take away how fans should feel about it. We know that people are still split over this. And it sounds like his comments, the last question he answered in the post-match press conference after Roma last night, where he was asked a question about the difference, you know, entertainment versus winning, and the inference being, you know, if he just sort of shut up shop, they might have got the victory over the line. And he And he just came out with this line about, I always want to be entertaining, and I always want people to tune in and enjoy our games and that kind of thing. It sounds like some fans have slightly sorry, that's my front door. Some fans have been slightly irked by that, which I think
Anne just come round the tea.
Isn't he? I'm trying to be quite defensive of him right now, to be fair. But it sounds like some fans were a bit irked by that, which I think is being a little bit overly sensitive. But I think it just comes down to the fact that at this stage, that's just how he's going to be. And I do think that some tweaks can happen here and there. I've said that consistently, and I think he's even shown that in a few games, as Tom Ulmer has talked about a lot this season. But overall, this kind of approach to being entertaining is something that he's not going to back down from. And he even said, you know, he made a sort of quip about it today, that you'll miss it when I'm gone, basically. And if someone comes in next who goes down the pragmatic approach, then we're going to miss it. And to be honest, I would. As the neutral who loves watching these games, the bigger question is, would you, I suppose, if we come to that, as the Tottenham fan?
Yes, absolutely. Listen, of course, it's what we want to see. It does give him a little bit of leeway, of course, because I think most Spurs fans would acknowledge that an entertaining team with flaws is always going to be preferable to a pragmatic one that ultimately does nothing, as has been the case with most of the Spurs teams over the past few years. So, yeah, fair play in that regard. He hinted that Romero might be back sooner rather than later. Didn't touch upon Van de Ven. Of course, Maddison came off the bench last night. There'll be no Bentancur because of his ban against Fulham on Sunday. We know what an important game this one is going to be. There are so many fans away from Tottenham who I'm sure would love to see Spurs lose. They're predicting they're going to lose after beating Manchester City away last weekend. I'm assuming Maddison's going to start again. What sort of match are you anticipating on Sunday? Because Fulham sort of blow hot and cold as well, don't they?
Yeah, I'd expect Maddison to come in. And I was maybe slightly surprised to see him benched against Roma because he was so good against Man City. He hasn't played that much recently. And maybe they could have done with his creativity. It's an interesting one now, isn't it, going into this game? I think when Kulusevski and Maddison have played together, maybe of late, it's been a little open. And I wonder if Maddison comes in, which you'd expect, does that mean Kulusevski goes to the right? Because you're not benching Kulusevski. I mean, he's an absolute machine who literally today or last night we were talking about these stats about Dejan in terms of ground covered in the Premier League this season. Only Bruno Guimaraes and Lewis Cook of Bournemouth have covered more ground, 130.4 kilometres Kulusevski has run, 130.8 is Cook and 134 is Guimaraes. But the key point is Guimaraes and Cook have both played far more minutes, or about 1,000 more minutes, or not far off, than Kulusevski. So it just underlines the work rate that he's put in, but also, you know, his end product's been brilliant. He's setting up the goal against Maddison, against Man City, the goal for Johnson last night as well. But anyway, I wonder if he plays, is he going to move back to the right? So what does that mean? Does that mean benching Brennan Johnson, or does he go full Ange again and goes just Bissouma as the holder and Maddison as Kulusevski? I mean, what do you think? Where do you think we're at? Do you think? I mean, I think Sarr has been playing really well recently, and it's not just the energy that he brings, which is obviously a key part. But the ball he played to Kulusevski in the build up to Johnson's goal last night was top quality. So I think, you know, from an end product point of view, he's making his own case for inclusion anyway, let alone the energy he brings.
You know, it's a difficult one, Tom, because obviously the changes he made at Manchester City worked perfectly, and they were specific changes for that opposition. He knew that Kulusevski was going to thrive out wide against the City. Then there's the temptation. Well, that's worked so well, it would be foolish not to try it again, albeit at home against very different opposition. I don't know. My gut feeling would be to keep Kulusevski out there and see if they can replicate the trick from last weekend. I'm always intrigued to see whether Archie Gray might be given a different role. I just can't wait to see his development, but perhaps the time hasn't quite come for that. I don't know. I'm not going to try and second guess Ange because it's impossible. I just hope, Tom, that that Spurs can produce a really good performance at the weekend. Because if they do, if they pick up three more points, you know, it's vindication that they can string back-to-back wins together in the league. You know, I don't want to get carried away, but if Manchester City were to get a decent result at Anfield at the weekend and Arsenal have got a tricky game as well, then suddenly Spurs aren't so far behind. I know I'm getting carried away, and I was chastised earlier today when, again, I began my mantra that if we'd beaten Ipswich, which we should have done, and if we'd won at Crystal Palace, which we should have done, and if we'd converted our domination into 3 points at Leicester, which we should have done, and if we'd beaten Newcastle, which we should have done, we'd be top of the league. Yeah, ifs, buts and maybes. But I just feel, again, there are a lot of those. I just think it's a really important game on Sunday. And Fulham, you know, I don't know what to expect from them because they were really poor last weekend, but they produced some great performances. And I've got this nagging feeling that Emil Smith-Rowe, who blows hot and cold, but he's probably going to have a good game. And wouldn't it be typical if a former Gunner did something untoward on Sunday?
It would. I mean, isn't it mad to a certain extent that after that Man City game, I thought, right, okay, maybe for a while, this whole narrative, this whole referendum around whole Ange's approach might calm down for a little while. And then already Fulham feels a big game because they go and lose at home. Mm. And I think it would be just the same. And they're just bonkers when you consider they've just pulled off what maybe the greatest result in their recent Premier League history. But that's where we're at. Fulham are a difficult team. I know they got thrashed last time around against Wolves, but Silva's done a great job there. He's taken them from, you know, difficult when they got relegated, and it's just been an upward trajectory since, and with losing key players along the way like Mitrovic and Paulinho, and they seem to be slowly getting better. So that's kind of where I'm at with Spurs in terms of the how attacking they play from their lineup. I think they would be fools to take them lightly by trying to put them all in. And that's why I wouldn't be surprised to see Sarr play midfield along with Maddison and Kulusevski back out wide. But at the same time, kind of comes back to what I was saying a few weeks ago about Spurs. If they want to be a serious side, and by serious side, I mean a team that you can depend and really expect to be challenging for major honours, not just one that can pull off great results here, you know, every so often. They've got to be winning games like this. They've got to win at home to Fulham to do that. And Kulusevski himself, when we spoke to him last night, talked about it being a must-win game. I mean, he's someone, he wants Tottenham to get right to the top, and he means first place. That seems a bit beyond them to my point of view. And when you're talking about Man City taking points off Liverpool, I would have thought a Spurs fan would be thinking the other way. I think Liverpool are gone from Spurs' point of view, and it's probably more, can he inflict more damage on City? And that might be more of a team to chase down. But yeah, I mean, Spurs, they really need to put in a performance and get a result more than anything to show that they, like I say, they can be on the path to being a serious side, which I think they've got the elements of doing it, but they haven't shown anywhere near enough consistency so far to suggest they're at that stage yet.
Yeah, well, it keeps us on the edge of our seats. Who knows what's going to happen? Whatever does happen, we will reflect upon it afterwards. But Tom, thank you very much. You better go and deal with your guest who was ringing the bell just a few moments ago. That is Tom Barkley from the Sun newspaper. I am Marcus Buckland. Speak to you again at the weekend. Come on, you Spurs.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.